Episode 280 of the Pilot to Pilot podcast takes off now. Fly with Garmin Avionics? Then grab your mobile device and make the Garmin Pilot app your cockpit companion. Get advanced functions you'll use before, during, and after every flight, including updating your aircraft's databases and logging engine data to plan, file, fly, log with Garmin Pilot. Aviation, there's a new offer from SiriusXM. Make sure you upgrade your next flight without upgrading your plane by getting the Garmin GDL52 portable receiver. The GDL52 has ADS-B traffic and weather, plus SiriusXM weather and entertainment. It has Bluetooth and works with Garmin Pilot apps. For a limited time, you can get a $300 rebate on the GDL52, plus it comes with a free 3-month trial of SiriusXM's weather and entertainment. I love flying with SiriusXM, and it's honestly one of my favorite features about having the G5000, so the GDL52 will offer you a very similar outlook on the weather and also getting to listen to some awesome radio stations on SiriusXM. So check out the GDL52 at aopa.org/SiriusXM. The Pilot to Pilot podcast is brought to you by Learn the Finer Points. Use the link below to save 10% off their ground school app.
Hey, this is Biz at Memes, private jet broker, meme lord, been around for 10 plus years, and I'm so happy to be invited on the show.
AV Nation, what is going on, and welcome back to the Pilot to Pilot podcast. My name is Justin Seams, and I am your host. Today's episode is the first ever private jet broker we've ever had on the podcast, so it was very interesting to break into that world and to see what it's like, what the lifestyle is like, how much money you can make, and how tough it can be to actually break into that industry. So BizF Memes, one of the funniest guys on Instagram, he is on this, and I will promise you, he shoots it straight. He tells you what he's thinking. He's not going to sugarcoat anything. So I appreciate the honesty, and it was a lot of fun to have him on and chat. Aviation, check out Pilot to Pilot hats. They are back. They're different than your trucker hats. They're the best hats we've ever made, ever had. We actually partnered with Bold Aviator, so go to boldaviator.com and you can find the hat. There's also going to be a link down in the description, and of course you can find it on our Instagram as well. Bold Aviator makes some of the best aviation swag, highest quality, and maybe we'll have some shirts out here soon, so let me know if you want some of those as well. But Aviation, I don't want to keep you much longer, so any further ado, here's BizAv Memes, the private jet broker. What's going on, man? Welcome to the Pilot to Pilot podcast.
How are you, buddy? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man, I'm doing good. It's been a long time in the making. You've canceled on me probably about 100 times. I've canceled you probably about 95 times. So it's almost even. We're getting there, though, but we're here. We are here right now.
Yeah, I'm very grateful. And again, sorry about the lack of being available.
Oh, you know I had to call you out. It's all good. That's what I do. Cool, man. So yeah, let's just go ahead and get started with it. I have never talked to a private jet broker before. I probably know very little about everything, and I'm sure people listening probably know more than I do. So just start from the beginning. I mean, one, let's start with you and your interest in aviation per se, and then we'll kind of dive into how you got to where you are today. So tell me, why did you ever think you would get into the aviation world, or what was the inspiration behind it?
Sure. Great question. To be totally honest with you, I really had no inspiration or love for aviation. I grew up in the automotive industry, father's entrepreneur. For me, I always thought that was, what I was going to do for the rest of my life. Make a long story short, I was working within the auto industry, as well as starting a company with my then best friend. That went south. Had left the automotive industry while I was building that company with him. And somehow, some way, I ended up online and, I came across a sponsored ad, and it was about a private jet broker position. So I kind of just started from there, and it was the most random thing ever. But, 10 plus years later, I think it's been a blessing, honestly. I mean, as much as this industry hurts, it's been the best thing I've ever done.
So tell me a little bit about that. So is it just as easy as that? You just see an ad, you click it, and then boom, you're a private jet broker? Or is there any kind of certifications? Are there classes? Or what's the next step after you click that ad?
Yeah, so obviously, as you know better than anybody else, aviation is a very regulated industry. However, on my side of the industry, it's fairly unregulated. If you want to be a broker, it's pretty much, especially if you're an independent contractor, it's very easy. You literally just call up, you know, a company and say, hey, listen, I'm interested in so-and-so. I want to learn, you know, do you have anything available? And as you know, being an independent contractor, it's, you know, it's 1099, 100% commission. You're kind of just like, it's a gamble, right? But for the owner of the company, of course, it's a great gamble. If you work out, they make money. If you don't, it doesn't really cost them much. Is that the traditional route? No, of course not. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, they get out of college and, you know, they apply for large companies like NetJets, let's say, or FlexJet, or, you know, VistaJet, and, you know, so on and so forth. But from, you know, the old school broker mentality, like that's pretty simple. It's not, you know, it's not regulated whatsoever.
And what all does a broker entail? Is it just like, hey, cool, I need this airplane, I'll get it for you? Or is
sure,
it like keep going.
Yeah, so great question. I mean, being a jet broker, I always kind of equated to like just being like a high-end real estate agent. It's the same thing, right? You have a client that wants, you know, a product or service, which in this case is, you know, is a private jet flight. You know, you source that aircraft, you sell it to them, and then you facilitate everything in the back end, make sure that they, you know, end up at the airport, hopefully on time, plane's not delayed, and they fly from A to B. Pretty, you know, it's pretty simple. I try to keep it as simple as possible.
What's the, I guess the best thing would be, what is kind of the one thing someone wouldn't expect when they get into this? Like they see, maybe they follow you or they follow some other private jet brokers and they're like, hey man, I could do that. But what's something that you think tricks people up or like is kind of a stumbling block for someone from either making it a real career versus just like, oh, I'll try this and then they're done in a year or so?
For sure. I think expectation in regards to work-life balance is huge. It's a 24/7, 365 business. Can't really speak for any other brokers, but for me, you know, I have clients that are literally based around the world. Time zones are a blessing and a curse. And when they call you, sometimes, you know, you're 3 hours, you know, behind, sometimes you're 7 hours ahead. And when they need something, you better be up, you better answer, you better handle whatever they need. So I would say probably work-life balance 150%.
What's a worst case and best case scenario? So like, what's like one of the ones you're like, man, I love being a private jet broker. I have so much time off, or I'm in the whatever, versus your worst case scenario where it's like, dang, bro, I've worked for like 36 hours in a row. I need a break.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm being totally honest, which I typically am, I think from a salesperson standpoint, I mean, it's a very lucrative business. If you have the right clients and you're able to put them on the right aircraft from the right operator, there's a lot of money to be made. I would say worst case scenario is, you know, again, it's just like being, let's just say, a real estate agent or any other commissioned salesperson. You know, it's a contact sport. You can strike out a lot. And a lot of times people don't have the persistence and the mindset to just push. I mean, when you fail time and time and time again, odds are you're probably going to quit, which is why this industry, like any other, you know, very saturated industry, like real estate, is very tough to be successful, right? It's not easy whatsoever.
Do people come into this thinking that it'll be easy and just like kind of like real estate, like they just think that they'll come in, you know, they'll create relationships, they'll be the best on price, they'll do the best service, or is it kind of like most people come in, they kind of just see the landscape and they understand it's kind of a grind and it takes a couple of years to get to where you want to get?
You know, I think social media kind of ruined it for a lot of industries. You know, you'll see online people post all sorts of stuff, right? You know, I've even seen posts, and I think I called him out not long ago. I mean, he was sitting in front of a plane that he chartered and he was posting a TikTok saying that he owns the plane. Like, you don't own the plane, you know what I mean? So when somebody who doesn't know anything about aviation and really has, you know, no idea what they're really going to do in life, and they see that, it's like, it's so misleading because it's not reality whatsoever. Are there people that, you know, own planes? Yeah, I do know people that own planes that work within the industry. Does it, or has it come from, you know, them being a broker? No, it's come from other things, but it's very, very rare to see that. So like I said, it's a very misleading industry right now. It's because of social media.
Yeah, I mean, that's for everything though, right? Like anyone can think flying for an airline's great or flying whatever, but they don't really understand that it's kind of a grind. It kind of sucks everywhere. Like there's unhappy Delta pilots. They just get paid a lot more than other pilots. They're just still unhappy too, though. They're complaining about everything.
Yeah, I would say, you know, there's a lot of complaints within the industry, but, you know, as you know, no industry, no person product or service is perfect. So you just got to figure it out. If you want to be around cool, be solutions oriented. If not, then do something else.
When you, so you get to see everything, like you get to see the catering side, you get to see all aspects of kind of what it takes to make a flight go, like FBO, pilots, flight attendants, everything, you know, like getting, make sure the car's there, all that kind of stuff. When you look at this, is there anything that you see that you wish you would have done? And like, you're like, dang, man, I deal with pilots a lot. You know, they don't really work that hard. They have more time off than me. Like maybe I should have pilot. Do you ever wish that you would have been a pilot or any other aspect of the aviation industry?
Just to make it like super clear, you know, the start to finish, being totally hands-on private jet broker is like the old school, vibes. I would say now, like this client services, this and that, like typically when you're a broker, depending on the company you work for, you sell, and then once it's sold, like they just pass it off to, you know, everybody else. But to answer your question, I've never really wished that I wanted to do something else, because in reality, if I wanted to do it, I would just do it. You know what I mean? I think for me, I fell into this position, or this career, I would say, and, it's been fun, but when I, you know, or the day that I'm not happy is the day that I'll do something else. You know what I mean? It's just, for me, it's that. I respect everybody else within the industry. Everybody has their role and responsibility. And, I like what they do, but I don't want to be them at all.
No, totally understand that. That's good. That means you're in the right spot for right now, right?
For right now. Yeah. We'll see.
It's pretty crazy. Do you remember the first time? I think you probably remember this. The first time I ever reached out to you.
Vaguely. I'll be totally honest with you. There's so many DMs that I get. It's tough. I'm sure you're worse than me because, you know, you have what? I would say 3 or 4x the amount of followers than I do. But you know, I don't remember exactly. I will say that I've always liked your content, and then, you know, I always gravitated towards you for sure.
It was actually before I even followed you. It was my buddy or some random YouTuber reached out to me. Like I mean, he's not random. He's very famous, has a ton of followers and does a ton of stuff. And he's like, he's great. Turns out to be a good dude. And actually, like, he calls me every once in a while, which is super random. But he reached out to me, called me when I was on an overnight in Cabo. And he was like, hey, I need an airplane. And I need to do like this this flight from here to here. Do you know anyone? And I reach out to all my friends. Everyone said, no. Then I reach out to George Dunn, mutual friend. He's a pain in the ass, but George, he's there. Hope he's listening to this. What's up? But he said to hit you up. And I was like, hey, man, I got a YouTuber that needs to get a plane.
Yes. Now I remember this. Yes, I do.
Do you remember that saga?
I do remember this 100%.
Yeah. So that is how we got introduced. And that's how we met, was through a famous YouTuber who had some issues getting an airplane.
Yeah, I do remember that. And shout out George. He's definitely somebody who I genuinely love dearly. He's one of the best people ever. He's been there, you know, personally and professionally. So he's cut from a different cloth for sure.
Yeah, no, George is great. I love giving him a hard time. When I say a pain in the ass, I don't really mean it. I just like, I don't want to give him any kudos without him hearing the bad stuff as well, because then his ego will get too high. Got to knock him down when he can.
Always.
Yeah. But that was my first kind of intro into your world, was that. And the amount of, which doesn't surprise me, because coming up when I was doing my time building and I was getting jobs, there were so many low level operations that you go fly for. But not to my surprise, it's the same thing in your world too. There's a bunch of, for lack of a better word, shitty operators out there that I'm sure you stay away from. And unfortunately, they chose the bad operator and they got scammed. And I think they got most of their money back, but there was no plane for them that day. So how often do you deal with stuff like that? I'm guessing now, maybe you go from the beginning when you're building your relationships, because I'm guessing now you kind of have it sorted out. Like, hey, I'm not touching them with a 10-foot pole, or hey, go here. But in the beginning, was it a bunch of trial and error? Was it like, oh shoot, they totally screwed me over?
Yeah, great question. In the beginning, of course, like anything else, it's always trial and error, because you don't really know until you know, right? I would say, you know, 10 plus years later, I've had the blessing to be able to communicate and get to know with a lot of different operators, whether they're owners, whether they're director of sales, presidents, CEOs, or just, you know, regular salespeople. And you kind of figure out who's who very quickly. And of course, you know, once you book that plane, send that wire, You pray that the flight is facilitated properly, but does stuff happen, as you know? Yeah, they do, but it's all about how they rebound after. I would say at this point, I only really deal with people that I have a relationship with. Even if another operator comes in and they're way less expensive, I'll tell my client. I'm a very straightforward person. I'm like, hey, listen, so-and-so is, you know, 15, 20K less. However, this is my relationship. We're always about minimizing risk. What do you want to do? This is what I recommend. I'm not selling them. I'm simply consulting. And more often than not, these types of individuals are always about minimizing risk because they need to get from A to B at a certain time. And, you know, there's no issues with spending more money. So at this point in the game, have I been screwed over? Of course, plenty of people get screwed over. I'm sure I've memed and ranted about it more often than not.
No way.
But I stay away. I stay away from, you know, certain individuals for sure.
Yeah. Do you have like a worst case scenario, like your one worst moment of being a private jet broker that you want to share or you can't share?
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely share. I would say probably worst was maybe year one or I think it was year one, maybe a year and a half in. I had booked a tour for a rapper, and make a long story short, the schedule that I was given was not the correct schedule. We booked it. Operator obviously facilitated everything. When we needed to make a change, there was a large delta between what was paid and what had to be paid. And I took the hit for it. I'm not going to say what the amount was, but I would say it definitely hurt. And it was a great lesson. I'm sorry. And I've never, ever done it again. Thank God.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of thing you kind of learn from your own mistakes, right? Or you learn from other people's mistakes. Same thing in being a pilot. You see someone really botch a landing and you hear their story and you're like, all right, well, I'm not going to do that. So I thought
you're a pilot. You guys always butter a landing, right?
I mean, I do, but like George and other pilots, not as much. So I'm sure you could figure it out, but yeah, done. No chance whatsoever.
I love it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you just learn from mistakes, right? And then you go teach people other things and you just go from there.
Yeah, they're very costly mistakes. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, especially when you're young within the industry and you're trying to, you know, build a book of business, you can't really afford to lose a client. And if you got to take a hit, whether it comes out of pocket or not, you know, it's going to happen. And if you want the client to stay around long-term, odds are you're going to take that hit. I would say now though, if there's ever any issues, I'm just super straightforward with the client. I'm not willing to lose money for the company or myself, especially if the client is at fault. You know, it's just I'm not going to sugarcoat things, and I'm not going to be a yes person. Just be straightforward, honest, and this is what it is. And this is how we're going to navigate the situation.
Right. And I think it's all about setting expectations up front, right? Like making sure there's no gray area. Be like, hey, this happens on you. Like, I want you to make sure that you know that. Like, obviously it's hidden in the contract, but like we're talking about this person to person and making sure you're aware of all the kind of liabilities that you are at stake and are going to be on you. And I'm not paying for it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, as you know, if the roles were reversed, you know, they would be doing the same thing. And that's just business. You know, there's a contract for a reason. Please review the contract before you sign off and, you know, include your credit card information and send a wire. It's very simple. Yet most people will not say that to the client because they're afraid, maybe. And the client doesn't read it because, you know, that's, you know, above them. So
yeah,
that's just my opinion though.
You know, I'm interested, going back to your bad experience, do you think that paid off? Like if you could go back in time, knowing everything you know now, like has that relationship and what you did, has that paid off for you over the last 10 years? Or do you think it was just kind of like just a learning example and just like, dang, I shouldn't put myself in this situation again?
Yeah, that situation actually paid off. That individual was we call him a one-hit wonder pretty much, had one very, very, very popular song. Made a ton of money and then kind of just, you know, fell off. But I did get some referrals way back when, and they are still flying with me to this day.
There you go. So it did pay off a little bit. Just a costly long-term play right there.
Yeah, that one hurt.
Yeah, that's really funny. Kind of looking at what you've seen over the last, how long have you been doing this for? 10 years, did you say?
Over 10 years. I'll be totally honest with you. I think I'm at 12.
Okay. So let's say 12 years. How have you seen personally in your day-to-day life, the industry change?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was reading an article, maybe 3-4 months ago. It was Jonah Adler, who's now the chief growth officer at VistaJet. Shout out Jonah. Great guy. Very smart individual. But he kept saying fragmented market, right? Which is so true. This industry is still very much a fragmented industry, right? There's not one company that kind of monopolizes everybody. However, what I do see now is the VistaJets of the world, NetJets obviously being NetJets, FlexJet, Fly Exclusive is growing. A lot of companies are just wheels up, obviously. They're acquiring. Will there be 1, 2, 3, 5, a dozen companies that control everything? Of course not. However, I personally believe that these larger companies with funding and purchasing power will continue to acquire and make sure that, the companies that have 10 plus planes, let's say, are, under their umbrella. And that's just something I think it's natural with anything, right? As you grow, you acquire, and that's how you continue to thrive and conquer. And I would say that's probably it. You just got the large guys that are buying up, and the small people either don't have the funding to, or the manpower, or the aircraft to compete. Or they just continue doing what they're doing, which will eventually end. Look at Executive Airlink. I mean, they're a perfect example.
Yeah, and I think one thing too is the rising labor costs, right? So pilots, they are just going to get paid crazy amounts of money, where the old mom and pop or this new hot carrier or whatever it is, new jet company coming out, they're not going to afford to pay them. And then those pilots are going to be like, all right, well, I'm going to either go to the airlines, I'm going to go to FlexJet, I'm going to go to NetJets, VistaJet, whatever it may be, because one, I know I'm going to get paid, and two, I'll get health benefits and a schedule. Wow. So it's going to be tough for a lot of these places to actually get and retain and keep pilots.
I totally agree. But your world when it comes to compensation and mine are two totally different things, right? You guys are, salary contracts, you have everything in writing, and you know exactly what you're doing and when you're doing it and exactly what you're getting paid, so on and so forth. I think from a sales standpoint, it's month to month. I mean, you could be killing it one month, and then the next month you get absolutely smashed. And that's, when it comes to 100% commission brokers, which a lot of people still are, there is really there's no liability for the owner. There's no salary there. They're not paying health insurance. You have, marketing spend, you have email, you have, company cell phone, laptop, if that, I know a lot of companies don't give that out. And that's pretty much it. Now, are there brokers or salespeople that obviously, get salary plus commission? Of course, there's different overhead there, but I don't think there's ever been, a squeeze in regard to, salespeople, squeezing the owners or the CEOs of the company whatsoever. It's not unionized.
Right.
Not like how pilots are.
And I guess I was more speaking about just these carriers and how they're not going to be able to compete with the pilots, which then kind of erases them from the landscape. And it just funnels more people that will fly jets into those systems that can't afford to pay for the pilots, rather than say like these smaller operators with one or two jets or management companies, and so be it.
For sure. That's something that's obviously super complex, and thankfully I have nothing to do with it whatsoever. I'm happy to watch it from afar.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear that. I don't blame you there. Let's take a break and hear from our sponsor, RAA. For pilots, career transitions not only come with new professional challenges, but also major changes to your personal life and your money. As airline specialized advisors, RAA is here to help guide you through each financial transition with clarity and confidence. Starting with 3 free planning tools available at raa.com/pilot-to-pilot, including From the Right Seat to the Left Seat, your guide to key financial factors to consider when upgrading to captain, which is very beneficial for me because I'm currently upgrading to captain, From the Left Seat to the Back Seat, outlining smart tips to help pilots and spouses make a smooth adjustment to life and retirement, plus a 401k calculator that lets you see how a change in seat, equipment, or early retirement could impact your retirement savings. Download the complete toolkit for free at raa.com/pilotthepilot. Then schedule a complimentary consultation with an RAA advisor today to learn more. Check out raa.com/pilotthepilot. Now back to today's episode. What is something, say someone's coming up to you right now. Someone sends you a DM like, yo, dude, like I'm so tired of this. I do whatever. Maybe I'm a Twitch streamer and I'm not doing it. It's not cutting it. I want to become a jet broker. What would you recommend them do? Would you say like, hey, dude, don't do it flat out? Or would you be like, hey, well, this is a good resource. Check this out. See if you really want to do it. These are the companies looking to and so forth.
For sure. Great question. I've gotten this numerous times over the years. I'm so honest. It's almost disrespectful how honest I am. You know, when it comes to being quote unquote jet broker, I tell them, look, I mean, educate yourself. Here are, you know, certain outlets. Here are certain people to reach out to. Is this really what you want to do? Can you risk, let's say, you know, 24 months without really making any money? Like, can you risk that? And I'm talking from 100% commission, like old school broker type mentality or, you know, angle there. You know, not somebody that is working for a company with, you know, a small base plus commission. I just tell them like, this is what is going to happen. You're going to work a lot. You're going to fail. It's a contact sport. You need to touch as many people as possible. Odds are you're going to be able to probably make something work if you have the mindset for it, but you're going to be told no more times than yes. Is that what you want? If not, go work for UPS. Shout out UPS. I heard they have great compensation packages and health insurance.
Yeah, but they're currently about to strike and it's going to be bad.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Well, it depends on who you're talking about, UPS. I think it's the drivers that are about to strike.
I'm sure they'll get their money.
Yeah, we'll see. It's interesting for all. Everyone seems to be in some kind of labor dispute right now.
That's something that you know, I just like watching from afar, and I'm happily not involved with that whatsoever. It sucks to even be involved in something like that.
Yeah. So you keep talking about how you need to be prepared for 100% commission. Be prepared for 24 months of really no guarantee that you're gonna have an income, or just like no real understanding of how consistent your income will be. So we kind of talked about how low it can be. Talk about the highs. Like, talk about, like, I mean, it doesn't have to be personal with your life, but like what you've heard, like what's like realistic that you can make? What's the high expectation? What's kind of like dream world? Talk a little about that.
For sure. Look, are there people that come out of the gate and do very well year one? Of course, they do. I could say when I started though, I was shaking my head. I mean, I think it was 3-4 months. I sold nothing. I was like, what am I doing with my life? This is insane to me. But I would say, and I, you know, I'm not going to throw any names out there, but I do know people that are making brokers that are making a million plus a year, 100%. If you're a broker and you're making, honestly, if you're making less than, you know, 150, 200,000 a year, you're probably not doing what you should be doing. Only because the commissions are, especially when you have high, and it's a high ticketed item, right? If you're chartering an aircraft that's, you know, 100K net, which is, you know, wholesale, and you throw 20% on there, I mean, do the math. If you're 1099, odds are you're getting 50% of that. You know what I mean? Do that, you know, 5-10 times a month, you know, times that by, you know, 12 months, you can make a ton of money. And, you know, are there guys that are doing very well? Yeah, they are. Are there guys that are doing horribly? Yes, but odds are they're leaving the industry and doing something else.
Yeah. Is there also kind of like, I relate it to the pilot world, like that's what I know. So I kind of relate, like my question is going to be kind of based on my own experiences. When you get to being a pilot, you start kind of at the bottom, right? You got to work your way up. Is that similar with you guys? Like, do you start like at a bigger company and kind of get your feet wet? Or is it more likely that like, maybe you can go on your, like you said, independent contractor, maybe you just like, start calling people like, hey, my buddy wants a plane. Okay, we got planes. Okay, cool. Let's sign this. Let's make a contract.
Yeah. You know, my trajectory was totally different than a lot of people. I worked for some small mom and pop boiler room type places when I was younger because I didn't know any better. Are there people that come out of the gate and work for large companies like, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but do they, you know, work for large companies and become successful right out of the gate? Of course. Do they work for large companies and have issues? Yes, of course. But for me personally, I worked for, you know, I mean, the first place I ever worked for, they didn't even have a coffee maker. It was insane. But I didn't know any better. I didn't know the industry. I had no clue what was going on. So to me, that was the norm. You know what I mean? So I would say, you know, looking back, would I have wanted to work for a larger company? I would say, yeah, because there's infrastructure there, there's guidance, you know, there's a lot of experience, but I mean, everybody's different.
Everyone is definitely different. Does you having that experience, is there any kind of want to maybe start a bigger company like that where maybe you're more in control and you have brokers underneath you, or you kind of have like this whole system going on, or are you kind of more about just being solo doing your own thing?
Yes. So, great question. I actually had this conversation with founder and CEO of a company that I'm huge fan of last year. You know, I've never wanted to work for somebody that's corporate, I would say, like just very large, I would say over 50, 100 employees. Because I'm me, and I truly believe that everybody is different, and you need to accommodate those individuals and tailor how they are to, you know, maximize ROI, right? And when you get into, you work for large companies, you just become another number. A lot of people are not going to like that I said that, but it's just fact, right? And you become another number, and you fall under, you know, one set of rules and, you know, one set of ideologies. And, you know, that for me doesn't work. So I've always been mom and pop boutique. Let's do it this way. And it's been good for me.
So is that a yes? You want to start your own one day? Is that kind of what we're getting at?
TBD.
Yeah. All right. Cool. There you go. What is, what's like the biggest mistake someone can do getting into this industry? Is it trusting the wrong people? Is it promising stuff that they can't back up on? So just having a bad name for yourself? I'm guessing you screw with the wrong person, it's going to be hard for you to ever get a job again in that industry or that side of the industry.
Yeah, I would say this is a loaded question, but I would say acting as if you know more than what you really know. Don't be worried about asking questions. There are people with way more experience than myself and even you, right? And we've been doing this for a while. There's always somebody that's more knowledgeable than you. Don't ever, assume that or think that you know everything, because odds are you don't. That's probably your biggest mistake you can make in this business. If you're not learning, literally you're not learning. You know what I mean? So for me, that's probably my first pillar. Always ask questions.
Who do you, let me see how I phrase this. Oh man, I don't know how to phrase that question. I'll come back to it. When you kind of came into this, did you think this was going to be a career, or were you kind of more banking on the fact like, I'll be a little stop job? You know, you said it didn't go as well for the first couple of months. What was there a quick exit plan, or was it, no, I'm in here for the long run? Like I need to succeed at this.
For me, it was just one of those things where, I mean, at least how I grew up, my dad's entrepreneur has owned, started, sold a ton of different companies. Nothing like Fortune 500 related, but or size. But you know, he's very experienced. But his one thing was, look, if you're gonna do it, just go 150% and try and do it the right way. If not, like, don't even get involved. So for me, when I got involved in this, I was like, all right, well, this sucks, but I'm gonna figure it out, and I'm gonna push as hard as possible, and I'm gonna ask or find out and just, you know, become as knowledgeable as possible. And you know what, 10, 12 years later, am I knowledgeable? Yes. Do I know everything? Of course not. Am I still trying to learn? Always. So I've never get involved with something and just think that it's like a 3, 6, you know, 9, 12 month thing. If we're going to do it, let's do it.
What's been the biggest payoff of doing this for the last 12 years? Is it relationships? Obviously, the money, especially if you're talking about some of the big bucks that you had the opportunity to make, that's got to be pretty good too. But I'm guessing you've had the opportunity to either speak with or help out some really, really big time and cool people.
I would say 100%. It's the networking, people I've been able to interact with, for sure. And that mainly came from social media. If I didn't have my meme page, odds are I would not be speaking with you. I wouldn't have been able to meet, you know, the Sergeys of the world or Thomas Flohr, or speak to, you know, Chris Haskell, let's say, or, you know, Jason over at Silver Air, or, anybody, I mean, literally nobody, I would have no ability to communicate and interact with these people that, whether you like them or not, are successful and very knowledgeable individuals. So I would say that's, you know, that's probably my biggest blessing. As tough and aggressive as the page has been, a lot of backlash, of course, but it's also been a lot of positivity over the years. That's definitely 100% my biggest win.
So starting Instagram is probably the best thing you've done, you would say.
Yeah, sadly.
But did you do it on your own? Did someone force you to do it?
No, I did it on my own. I used it as a form of therapy way back when. I just, you know, I would see things or things would happen to me personally. I'm like, oh my, I'm like, what am I doing? And I'd vent to, you know, family or friends, and they had no idea what I was even talking about. It was like, you know, speaking, you know, Mandarin to somebody that doesn't know Mandarin, right? And I just, you know, I was like, all right, well, I can either post selfies of myself, which I would never do. That sucks. Or I can just make memes because they're kind of funny and it's therapeutic for me. And, you know, I had another page, won't say which one it is. That one, you know, years ago, that one got super aggressive, but I ended up deleting it because it took a long, you know, it took a lot of energy to manage that page. And then I started this one, and look, it's been fun. I think there's a lot of truth behind the memes that I post, and people can relate to it. So for me, it's therapeutic, it's fun, and it's relatable to everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. No, your memes are funny, and it is definitely relatable. Love all the ones bashing pilots; those are my favorite. So keep them coming.
I mean, you know, I call it how we see it. That's my favorite line.
That's why I like it. Yeah, that's why it's usually always true. If it wasn't true, I'd let you know and I'd tell you you're wrong.
Well, I appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Is there anything else about kind of your world that you want to make sure that you can get off, that you want to make sure you can say or make sure people are aware?
For sure. I would say, and this is something I've always ranted about over the years, just look, if you're going to do something, just do the right thing. As hard as it is, just do the right thing, whether it's, you know, not screwing over the client, whether it's paying your people, whether it's helping another broker or, you know, flight attendant out or pilot out or whoever. If you can help and you can do the right thing, just do it as hard as it is and don't expect anything in return. And for me, that's made me so happy, whether it's, you know, do the Biz Av Gives Back we did years ago. You know, during COVID, or, you know, the plethora of DMs with, hey, do you know anybody that works here, or do you know anybody that's hiring here, or this or that, or whatever it is, if you can help, just help. And it's that simple. It makes me happy and it should make you happy.
Yeah. And especially the whole point where you say, do it without expectations, right? Don't expect anything back. Just help out of the goodness of your heart. And usually things kind of work out for you in your favor. And if there's ever a chance for them to help you, they'll be more inclined to do it than when you're like, hey, well, what are you going to do for me now? You know?
Absolutely. I mean, the amount of times that I have gotten DMs or calls or texts, hey, do you know anybody here? Or can you help me with this? And, you know, they booked a trip and I've never gotten paid, but I've never asked. I've never expected anything. To the point where an owner operator literally told me, stop working for free. You keep helping people out. You know what? I told him, you're probably right. However, it makes me happy and I'm just doing the right thing. I don't want to go into something and just expect, right? If I can help you, I'll always help you regardless of what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I got a couple rapid fire questions for you. Now, these are mainly aviation related, so I'll try to tailor them to you, but I feel like you can answer them, a lot of them, because you deal with a bunch of airplanes. What's your favorite airplane to either put clients on? I know it depends on the mission, but just like if someone is doing the craziest trip, what's like your go-to airplane, unlimited budget? What are you going to try to get them on?
Oh man, you know, I'm super biased. It's Gulfstream all day long. Obviously you're going to go all the way up if there's no budget, the 650ER. Outside of that, I would probably say Global 6000 started at 100. But I'm a huge Gulfstream fan, very marketable.
What's one plane that just makes you roll your eyes whenever someone's like, well, what about this plane? This one's cheaper. What's like one plane that you won't even let someone go on?
I would say one that rolls my eyes, probably Legacy 600, only because they're very tough to sell to a client that doesn't know much about aviation and they just see Gulfstream or Bombardier all day.
Yeah. What's the ugliest airplane you've ever seen?
Oof. I'll go this airplane. I'll probably Piaggio.
Hey, day. I knew we'd be friends. Love it.
That thing is, what is that?
It's that's a good thing. What is that? That's perfect. Just need a picture of it and say, what is that? A flying catfish. That's what it is. What's something you wish you knew before you became a private jet broker or just in the industry at all?
Ooh, that's tough. I would probably say the work-life balance for sure. I mean, it's been tough. It's been tough for me personally over the years.
How do you have a work-life balance? Especially when you have time zones everywhere. Is it something that you farm out? You get people underneath you? Like, how do you make it work?
No, I'm hands-on. I do everything myself. I'm not at that point where, you know, people are doing things for me. And would I ever want that? No, of course. Of course not. I've yet to figure it out, to be totally honest with you. It's a daily struggle.
Yeah, I hear that. It's a lot of sleepless nights, I'm guessing.
Yeah, especially when you get a mechanical the night before, 100%.
Which is what you're dealing with right now, and you took time to come talk to me, right?
Yeah, how funny the irony there, right?
Yeah.
The timing.
Who would be, like, is there one person in this industry? It could be a broker, it could be a pilot, it could be someone famous, whatever it may be. Who's someone involved in aviation or what you do that you would love to meet and, like, pick their brain and just have dinner with?
It's already happened. Happened last year, Thomas Floor, all day.
Cool. Was that just a cold call? You just like hit him up like, yo, bro, let's go get some lunch out here. I'll pay. He's like, all right, cool. Let's do it.
No, one of his close friends, I didn't even know was following my page, sent him my memes. And we just, you know, started chatting and, I would say, I don't know, maybe a year later, something like that. I was heading to London to meet up with one of my buddies, shout out Grant DuPage. And I was talking to Thomas and he's like, hey, I'll be here if you want to meet. And I got to meet him and we had a great conversation. Super humble guy, super, super knowledgeable. And somebody, whether you like him or not, I've always looked up to him and I wish them nothing but the best.
What's it like when you meet someone like that? Like, I don't want to necessarily say like an idol, because I don't know how much you knew him before, like looked up to him before. But when you meet someone who has been in the industry, who is the head of a very successful aviation company that's just been doing great things and earning the USA and acquiring pretty much everyone you can ever imagine. But what's it like actually talking to them on like on a personal level and seeing who they are and maybe getting them outside of that, the normal like business mentality? Is that interesting to see someone kind of like their true colors and who they really are?
Yeah. You know, it was a totally interesting conversation. We rarely talk business at all. He just wanted to know about me, which is the coolest thing ever. Right. I mean, how many people do you meet that are successful that just talk about, you know, their accolades in life? I'm sure he could talk about this or talk about that, but he just wanted to know about me. And I think that was the coolest thing. And, you know, I left there, you know, wanting to know more, but I read about him years ago and, you know, how he even came up with VistaJet is what really intrigued me. Right. Which most people probably don't even know, but, you know, how he came up with it with the name and then, the reason why he, you know, pushed that name was the coolest thing ever. And for me, that's super interesting because, that takes a creative mindset to do that. And most people just aren't creative, especially in this business. As you know, everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yep. They like using big buzzwords, right? But then they don't do anything.
Oh,
different.
Yes. Yes. We're front running aviation. We're revolutionizing air travel, blah, blah, blah. It's the same stuff, different day, yeah, pretty much.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, tell him sometime to come on the podcast. You know, I might get fired from my job because I'd be interviewing the CEO of a competitor, but he might have to give me a job afterwards. But tell him to come on the podcast.
Are you guys really competitors? You know, come on.
Yeah, right. No one can really compete with us, right?
No, I'm joking. I mean, I think it would be fun. You know, at least you wouldn't be. I think you'd have fun.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
What's your favorite overall thing about this industry?
I would say the people. 100%. There's just a lot of, there's a wealth of knowledge, and whether that's aviation related or not, there's a lot of people that have gone through a lot of things, and when you're able to build rapport, get to know them and allow them to rub off on you, that just makes you a better person. And I mean, 100%, I would say that if it wasn't, if the people weren't so interesting, I'd probably be doing something else. That keeps me rejuvenated for sure.
Yeah, the people in this industry are great, whether it's passengers to deal with, the personalities, other pilots that we get to deal with, or just the people you have to talk to on a daily basis to make things happen. It's wild, truly wild.
It's something that I would never, ever want to lose.
Yeah, I hear that. Is there one airport that someone's like, hey, I want to fly here to here, and you hear this airport and it just makes you cringe because every time you have to deal with a plane in and out of this airport, something goes wrong. Is there anything, you have one airport that's like that for you?
I don't have one airport that's like that for me. I mean, where I've had the most issues in my career, Teterboro all day long. I mean, as busy as it is, obviously, I mean, you're going to have issues, but somehow, some way, I don't know what it is. When it pours, it rains, man, and that's the airport where it does.
Is there a certain time of the year that's busier for you? Is it like Thanksgiving, Christmas, Super Bowl, all those kind of things? Are those the busy times of year, or what did it surprise someone? What's most busy time?
I mean, there's always, like anything else, there's always going to be in a high season. You know, you have people that live in South Florida, and then, you know, when it hits summer here, they go up north. So, of course, you're going to get, you know, that south and north traffic. But if you... You know, my thing is, if you have a book of business and you build it the right way, odds are you're going to have clients that travel year round. There's no high, low season. They're just business people, or they're people that have to get from A to B and often. And those are the ones that you want to go after. You don't want to go after people that are, you know, flying just for holidays, or, you know, once, twice, three times a year. I mean, sure, you have them, of course, but, you know, just try and get the ones that are going, you know, going around the world every month.
And the most difficult part of your job, other than, let's say, work-life balance, but on the daily, so whether it's maintenance, whether it's like stuff not showing up, people not coming to work, what's like a daily issue that really can make someone go crazy?
I would say expectations all around. You have pricing expectations with the operator, pricing expectations with the client. You know, you have aircraft expectations. You have, you know, interior refurb, exterior refurb expectations. You have Wi-Fi expectations, catering expectations, all sorts of things. I would say just literally setting and managing expectations is the biggest struggle. Everybody wants everything for nothing. And you need to set that expectation that it's not going to happen. It's very, very tough. It's stressful for sure.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine. I mean, I see those things kind of fall apart because expectations weren't set right on a daily basis as well. Whether it's like catering is a huge pain point. Can't trust any caterer these days, whether it's crew food or owner food. It's just like, sometimes you just shake your head like, where did you get this from? Is this even real meat? Like my food, it's like, this is not a steak. Like, come on, get out of here.
Oh yeah, you know I'm going to shout out Air Culinaire. They just love me.
Your favorite?
Yeah, they're my favorite.
Yeah, that's good. Well, we'll stop there because I don't want to get you sued anymore. You know, it's let's keep it amicable. Everyone's doing great. It's a fun time. Oh, I actually got one more question. We kind of talked about I guess I'm going to ask both, but what would you say is the biggest regret in your 12 years of being a private jet broker?
Oh man, that's tough. I would probably say I should have done more research in regards to the company or the companies that I originally worked for. Yeah, I would say that I lost a lot of years, man. I lost a lot of years just truly struggling. And I should have just went to a larger company or tried to go to a larger company and just learn from there. There was no guidance the first couple companies I worked for, and it was a struggle learning. But I mean, I did it obviously, but it was, you know, you always want to learn from somebody that learned the right way, and I was unable to do that in the beginning of my career. So,
are there any resources out there now for someone that's starting up to kind of figure it out, or is it still just right now? Just everyone's got to figure it out on their own.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's resources. I would say though. Look, Google is very powerful, right? Is there a lot of correct information? Yes. Is there a lot of false? Yes. However, if I truly believe that if you want to get into sales, you can read between the lines and you can figure out what's right, what's wrong. But at the end of the day, just Google the big guys and, you know, learn from them. Or, you know, get on social media and, you know, follow BizApp memes and I'll answer all your questions.
There you go. Shameless plug. Last question. What's the biggest win of your career outside of meeting Thomas?
Biggest win of my career? That's TBD, to be totally honest with you. I'm hoping my career goes longer. I'll truly have a win.
Well, I hope so too. If your career ends after this podcast, I apologize, but I hope it does go longer and I hope big things come, whether it's in this industry or the next industry or whatever you do next, man. But it's been great talking with you. It's been a long time coming, right? Like a long time coming, but we did it. We got it. George will still never be on the podcast. Sorry, George. Yeah, man, that's all I got for you.
I appreciate you so much. Thanks for having me. It's truly an honor because, you know, everybody else that's been on your podcast is definitely not what I do for a living. I'm happy to be the first one. And, you know, I wish you nothing but the best. And I'm sure we'll be chatting, I don't know, 3 minutes.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate you coming on. I hope you get that plane maintenance figured out.
Yeah, that's always fun.
We'll see you, man. Have a good one.
Take it easy.
Aviation, that's a wrap on today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Oshkosh is coming up. Today's Sunday when I'm recording this. I will be there Monday. So tomorrow, I got a 5 a.m. flight, 3-hour drive from Chicago, and we will be there. So looking forward to seeing everyone there. Maybe a live podcast at the RAA booth, so be on the lookout for that. Aviation, I hope you're having a great day. And as always, happy flying.